Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh. Yes, welcome back to the airwaves of the Voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM and 95.8 in the Boland. Alhamdulillah, it is Monday, the 11th of December 2017, and that corresponds with the 22nd of Rabiul Awal, 1439. A very big shukran to our sound technical engineer, and that is Mr. Faldi Fandalali. Also, huge shukran to our producer, and that is Tasneem Adams. Now, over the past few days, we have been closely watching developments in the Middle East following US President Donald Trump's announcement that he would recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital and move the US embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. As we've seen in the media, protests have erupted across the occupied Palestinian territories, with thousands of Palestinians taking to the streets in what has been called the Day of Rage. Thousands have been injured in scuffles with Israeli forces who have used firebombs and tear gas on protesters. But the outrage has been global. An estimated 20,000 people filled the streets of Jordan this weekend, chanting, "Jerusalem is the capital of Palestine." We saw protests in Malaysia outside the US embassy and in Istanbul as well. On Wednesday, Cape Townians are set to march to Parliament in a protest organized by the Muslim Judicial Council, Al-Quds Foundation and other solidarity organizations. Tonight on The Burning Issue, we ask how South Africa should respond. Pro-Palestinians activists say they are tired of empty, meaningless lines from the South African government expressing its support for Palestinians and the two-state solution. As ANC branches are expected to meet at this week's ANC elective conference in Johannesburg, what resolutions on Israel and Palestine should be taken? Now, just a reminder to our listeners, we'll only be opening the lines at around 8:30, but you can still participate in the program by sending us your questions or comment via the SMS line, and that is 47913, alternatively via WhatsApp on the number 0722380712. Now, we are joined in studio by Terry Crawford Brown, who is representing the Palestine Solidarity Campaign. Later in the program, we will be joined online by Maulana Ihsan Hendricks, who is the Al-Quds Foundation Director, and as well as we'll be joined online by Professor Farid Isaac, who is a board member of BDS South Africa, and that is the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions. But for now, let's greet Terry Crawford Brown. Terry, very good evening to you.
Good evening. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Thanks for joining us in the studio. Now, you've obviously heard my introduction. What would your immediate comment be on what the current situation is?
Well, obviously, President Trump has exasperated the world, but he has ignored the fact that since 1928, annexation of land by conquest is illegal in terms of international law via the Kellogg-Briand Pact of 1928, the UN Charter. Annexation of land by war and conquest is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And so he thinks that realities in the ground can overwhelm that. That's not the case, as the outcry internationally has shown. I think, in fact, he has weakened himself dramatically, and the United States, because no longer are we going to be taken in by the idea that the United States is a neutral mediator in this issue. The U.S. has discredited itself entirely. And hopefully after 25 years of the so-called peace process, that is now coming to an end and we can actually get on with meaningful negotiations between the two parties.
Okay, this is another question that I've got. How is the recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel legitimizing the Zionist Israeli occupation?
It doesn't. It simply highlights the illegality of the Zionist occupation, both of Jerusalem and other areas of Palestine.
Mm-hmm. And I think you've maybe touched on it, but is the decision of Trump illegal under international law?
Absolutely. It's illegal, has been since 1928. This is not something new.
Mm-hmm.
It's illegal in terms of international law. through the UN Charter, but numerous resolutions of the UN Security Council.
Just to remind our listeners that this evening, our focus on the burning issue is a deeper look at what is happening with the Trump's Jerusalem decision. We are joined in studio by Terry Crawford Payne, who is representing the Palestine Solidarity Campaign. And as we said, we will be joined online by Maulana Ihsan Hendricks, who is the director for the Al-Quds Foundation, as well as Professor Farid Isak, who is a board member of BDS South Africa. Now, Terry, if I may call you Terry.
Absolutely.
How does this decision affect the prospects of possible peace in the Middle East?
Obviously, there's huge outcry at the moment internationally.
Mm-hmm.
But once the dust has settled, I think I'm hopeful that it will actually advance the issue. That we have been living under a cloud, a cuckoo land of a two-state solution possibility negotiated between the Americans and the Israelis and forced on the Palestinians. Now that that facade is removed, I think we'll move on to other issues. The question is how the international community balances the scales so that proper negotiations can take place. Until now, the scales have been so imbalanced, there's been no negotiations. Mm-hmm. So it's now up to the international community, through the Arab League, through the African Union, 138 countries that have recognized the state of Palestine, to insist internationally we've had enough of this lot.
Okay. Now, I believe also that on the Thursday, the 7th of December, the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, you guys had a press statement as well as some other sort of action happening on that particular day. Maybe just share with our listeners about this particular event.
Yes, we responded immediately by calling for a placard demonstration on Friday afternoon outside St. George's Cathedral to highlight the connections between international support for the struggle against apartheid during the 1970s and 80s and the parallels with apartheid in Israel and Palestine as a crime against humanity. In addition, there is the genocide and, in addition, the war crimes. So Israel is repeatedly in violation of international law. But it was because of international solidarity that we, to the surprise of the world, came through a relatively peaceful transition. The expectation was that we would have a bloodbath and a civil war. We certainly had problems, but it was not nearly as disastrous as it might have been.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think in your press statement, for example, you note that South Africa's own liberation from the system of apartheid was a consequence of international solidarity. And I think, is this what you are calling for?
Yes, and the world actually looks to South Africa to lead that solidarity.
Almost kind of simply because, you know, South Africa found itself also in an apartheid state a few years back.
Yes. And the parallels have now been established through our own Human Sciences Research Council research, the Russell Tribunal on Palestine, which met here in the District 6 Museum in 2011, that Israeli government conduct towards Palestinians meets the legal criteria of apartheid as a crime against humanity. And in terms of the Rome Statute, apartheid is no longer just limited to South Africa. South Africa is given the name of apartheid, but apartheid is a crime in international law, a crime against humanity.
Mm-hmm. And then I think, you know, one of the famous quotations, for example, comes from our late ex-president Nelson Mandela, where he declared that South Africans would not be truly free until Palestinians are free.
Yes, and I hope that comes through at the ANC's Congress this coming weekend.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is also what we were stating earlier on, is that, for example, they will be having the elective conference in Johannesburg, and we look forward to see what resolutions on Israel and Palestine should in fact be taken. But in terms of your action, as you said on Friday, the placard demonstration, certainly you made some sort of call, one of it being to release immediately all Palestinian political prisoners, for example. What are some of the others that you are calling on?
Well, we're calling for the end of the occupation, including the demolition of the apartheid wall.
Mm-hmm.
The apartheid wall is an appalling structure. So there's the end of the occupation, but also that there should be full human rights for Arab Israeli citizens and others, and the right of return of refugees. which has been acknowledged by the United Nations since 1948, that the Palestinian refugees have the right of return.
Okay. Well, I've got a message here from 5686, and it says, I was at a Palestinian rally, and it was said at that meeting that Jerusalem's capital will be Al-Quds. Well, there's one of our listeners that's giving a comment.
Well, Al-Quds is the Palestinian name for Jerusalem.
Well, once again, a very big shukran and thank you to our listeners for their participation to the program. Now, Terry, further also I noticed, for example, that you were urging Cape Townians of all communities, particularly Christians and Jews, as well as Muslims, to demonstrate their commitment to universal human rights.
Yes, this is a human rights issue. It's not a Muslim, Jewish, Christian issue, though obviously Jerusalem is sacred to all three Abrahamic faiths. And we should be emphasizing this is a human rights issue. It's not a Muslim, Jewish collision, as the Zionist government would like to have the world believe. It's a human rights issue, and it's incumbent on people of all faith and people without faith to come to support this in terms of human rights issues.
Well, so certainly, as Patiri Payne, is a human rights issue. And if you have just joined us here on The Burning Issue, we are joined in studio by Terry Crawford Brown, who is representing the Palestine Solidarity Campaign. We're going to be joined online now by Maulana Ihsan Hendricks, as well as Professor Farid Isaac. Now, over the past few days, we have been closely watching developments in the Middle East following US President Donald Trump's announcement that he would recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital and move the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. As we've seen in the media, protests have erupted across the occupied Palestinian territories, with thousands of Palestinians taking to the streets in what has been called the Day of Rage. Thousands have been injured in scuffles with Israeli forces who have used firebombs and tear gas on protesters. Now, I think let's go for a quick ad break, and when we come back, we'll continue with the program called The Burning Issue here on The Voice of the Cape. Welcome back to The Burning Issue here on The Voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM and 95.8 in the Boland. And if you have just joined us this evening, we're looking at how South Africa should respond. Pro-Palestinian activists say they are tired of empty, meaningless lines from the South African government expressing its support for Palestinians and the two-state solution. ANC branches are expected to meet at this week's ANC elective conference in Johannesburg. What resolutions on Israel and Palestine should be taken? And this obviously also comes from the press statement actioned by the South African government. Now, we are joined online by Maulana Ihsan Hendricks, who is the director for the Al-Quds Foundation. Maulana, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh, Ridwan. To all the listeners of Radio Voice of the Cape, fellow South Africans, and our comrade Terry Crawford Brown in the studio.
Shukran, Malana. Malana, how does the recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel legitimize the Zionist Israeli occupation?
No, not at all. It can never legitimize the occupation, because occupation is a crime against humanity. In this particular instance, a crime against the Palestinian people. So there is no way that it can be legitimized in any way. And therefore, in fact, I support the very strong opinion of Terry Crawford Brown, when we must remind our community that Jerusalem Al-Quds is, of course, the capital for the three Abrahamic religions, Christianity, Judaism, as well as for the Muslim community. And we cannot begin to think that Mr. Trump's announcement is one in isolation of the type of collaboration that he enjoys from prominent Arab leaders. And I think Mr. Trump is taking completely advantage of the present prevalent climate that is prevalent in the Middle East.
Okay, so we're also joined online by Professor Farid Isaac, who is a board member of BDS South Africa. Professor, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. and your listeners.
Professor, you've obviously heard what Maulana Ihsan Hendricks has said. Anything that you wish to add at this stage?
Well, I'm really sorry, but I just got on, so I just got the last sentence or two.
Okay.
So not yet.
Now, the question we asked Maulana, Professor, was how the recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel legitimizes the Zionist Israeli occupation?
Well, I mean, there's nothing really that can legitimize it. but what may be giving it further legitimacy in the eyes of some people, the international community has quite clearly indicated that they're not going along with it. It is a big let at the upfront about it. It is a major victory that the United States has shifted, has decided to ship the embassy to Jerusalem. And that is why there is so much anger throughout the international community, more particularly inside the Arab world.
Mm-hmm.
The evident and clear rejoicing in Israel and in the Zionist world, that is a reflection of it. And so, but on the other hand, I think it is also just making something much more visible that has been known to all of us. Firstly, there is no peace process. And secondly, the United States has never been a genuine peace broker. And so the one advantage, the one silver lining that we see in this is the destruction of the myth that the United States has an interest in peace, firstly, and secondly, that the United States could possibly be trusted to be even handed.
Maulana Ihsan, on peace brokerage, what is your view on this decision? How will this affect the prospect of peace in the Middle East?
Well, of course, we have seen, particularly over the last so many years, that all peace initiatives has never come to fruition. And so the question of whether there is really a peace process, it is beginning to sound very laughable that, you know, the United States of America, correctly as Professor said, has never been genuine peace brokers. Here it is completely one-sided. It is moving completely in the interest always of the occupier, Zionist occupation. Of course, there is not a community that wants more peace than the Palestinian people. I think that the Palestinian people have shown their willingness. We have 23 years ago, we have seen the Oslo Agreement, and what if one goes to the essence of the Oslo Agreement, you will see that the late Yasser Arafat and the Palestinian Authority contributed more and make more compromises so that at the end of the day there may be peace. So one wonders, you understand, to what extent really. I don't think that the Zionist occupation themselves are very much interested in the peace process. So yes, one has to really think whether there is genuinely a peace process that every time collapses and crumbles in front of our eyes.
Professor Farid Isaac, as we said, board member of BDS South Africa, we are informed that ANC branches are expected to meet at this week's ANC elective conference in Johannesburg. Now, should the ANC now consider a serious BDS strategy against Israel?
Well, the ANC, in terms of its policy, has not specifically mentioned BDS in its previous policy documents, but the ANC has clearly called for some measures against Israel. So on the one hand, one has the upcoming policy conference, the upcoming elective conference coming up, and on the other hand, there has been existing ANC policies, and that is now, the intention is that that should be up and calling for a downgrade in relations with Israel. Now, that's not the ideal situation. The ideal situation is that South Africa should have no diplomatic relations with Israel at all. There is no excuse for a democracy or a democracy-loving country that acquired its own freedom in the way South Africans have to have any kind of diplomatic relations with Israel. But in some ways, I mean, politics is also the art of the doable. And so there are many people who are saying this is the least that you can do to downgrade your relations with Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So it is quite clear that there is enormous support for this inside the ANC as an organization. Whether there is sufficient support among the Weiners and Deeners in the ANC, that's a different story. Whether there is the political will on the part of government to actually implement such a policy if it becomes a full ANC policy at the December conference, that is a completely different story.
Thierry, maybe just your comment on that.
Well, I would hope that the scale of international opinion will push the ANC to start implementing what it has been policy and what has not been implemented. So they've already heard from the ANC members that 75% of them want the downgrading of the embassy. And this is now the time to actually implement that and go beyond downgrading to actually breaking off diplomatic relations.
Maulana Ihsan Hendricks, recently we saw demonstrations by Palestinians in Ramallah in South Africa protesting what they called the South African government's betrayal against the Palestinians. Why is there a contradiction between ANC policy and the South African government's actions on Palestine?
Yeah, that is a very important question, and perhaps maybe Professor Farid can give us a little bit more insight into that. But I think that it is clear that the Palestinian people started picking up, because there's a number of recent, very serious initiatives that we have seen that does not enjoy the fulfillment. And I think that demonstration in Ramallah is just, again, to remind the South African community of their historical past, and that the Palestinian people were always in the forefront in supporting the struggle for the South African community, for their freedom and their liberation. And so, there has been indications that the South African government seems not to be too serious on the question, of course, of as though the normalization of relationships between South Africa and the state of Israel and a number of other aspects. And in fact, we see many things are intensifying, as though there has not been an historical past of struggle in South Africa. And the Palestinian people, of course, you can never underestimate their intelligence. And I think that they needed to. The demonstration of the Palestinian community in Ramallah is in many ways, of course, what many South Africans have been expressing here in South Africa, concern about how the continuity of the South African government in enjoying economic relations and other forms of relations. So, yes, we cannot close our eyes to that.
Shukran for that. Professor, maybe Farid, you may want to add to what Maulana has just said.
I mean, look, on the one hand, ANC statements keeps on reiterating their position in solidarity with the Palestinians. So at an official level, there has been no change inside the ANC. There are two problems with that. The conditions under which the Palestinians live and die worsen every day. And so it's simply not enough for the ANC to keep on reiterating and restating the same positions that they've been stating for the last 20, 25 years. If the Israelis are upping the game in terms of the dispossession, the marginalization, the oppression, the ethnic cleansing in Israel, if the ANC calls itself a liberation struggle organization, the ANC simply has to up the game. And the ANC hasn't done that significantly. The second thing, and I'll come back to the ANC in a moment, the second thing is this, that there's always a difference between a political party that governs and the government itself. When one governs, in some ways you come to terms with the kind of restrictions, the larger real politics, economic constraints, international diplomacy constraints, that in some ways limits your ability to act. That we understand. So there's always a bit of a gap between a ruling party and the same party actually being in between government and a party. However, inside the ANC, what is worrying is that in the last few months, there have been a significant number of events that have taken place, and they've been excused away all the time. The chairperson of the ANC's International Relations Committee and the committee actually had a meeting inside Luthuli House with an Israeli cabinet minister. She did offer an excuse that it was an accidental meeting. Now, it really boggles the mind how an accidental meeting can take place between a committee and an Israeli minister inside Luthuli House. Then inside, other media has reported how the same chairperson of the committee has been in touch with the Jewish Board of Deputies. What the International Relations Committee has got to do with the Jewish Board of Deputies, a religious organization, God alone knows. Political entities interact with other political entities. If the Jewish Board of Deputies met, say, with the Commission on Religion, Cultural and Linguistic Rights, that's a different thing. But the Jewish Board of Deputies is supposed to be a religious organization, not supposed to be a lobby for another country.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had the case of the Deputy Director General of DIRCO handing a gift over to the passing Israeli embassy. And then you had the previous Director General of Foreign Affairs in Israel meeting with the former Director General of Foreign Affairs of DIRCO in South Africa about nearly a year ago. So there's been this number of moves that, in terms of ANC policy, it violates ANC policy. And yet we don't see anybody reprimanding these ANC politicians for violating ANC policy. So we suspect they've been checking out the waters for further policy changes. And there is a definite element inside DIRCO of former ambassadors, and one or two well-placed politicians that clearly serve the interests of the Zionist lobby inside the Department of International Relations and Cooperation.
So
we know exactly who these people are. And now I'm just talking in a general capacity, not in my capacity as chairperson of the board of BDS. And we've confronted some of these people with what they've been up to. They haven't given us convincing explanations. And at the moment, nearly all the branches throughout the country, all the provinces, have endorsed a position of at minimum the ANC should downgrade its relations. What I suspect that lobby will do, and if I will conclude on this note, what I suspect the pro-Israel lobby inside the ANC will do, they will go for a downgrade resolution, but they will put so many conditions attached to it that in effect it means nothing. This, I suspect, is the game that they're playing at the moment. But we will see. Cyril Ramaphosa over the weekend wrote in an interview in the British Press about how the branches are the heart and soul of democracy inside the ANC.
Okay,
the branches are the heart and soul of democracy inside the ANC, then clearly the ANC must listen to those branches.
Shukran, Professor Farid.
This conference will prove whether that is the case or whether the ANC is really in the hands of a few people who manipulate things behind the scenes.
Shukran for that time. It's really catching up with us. Can I just ask Maulana Ihsan, beyond the mass marches to parliament, the picketing and those kind of things, what other action can be taken by civil society?
Yeah, I think it is very important that we intensify our efforts in that particular regard. We have never believed that the public demonstrations are the ultimate and the only solution But I think particularly in this particular instance, and if I may use this particular platform, it is, we have tried over the years, and correctly as Terry Crawford Brown said, this is not a Muslim issue, it's not a Christian or a Jewish issue alone. And particularly in my capacity as the National Director of the Al-Quds Foundation and former President of the Muslim Judicial Council, that we call out and we begin to seriously work towards the collective in South Africa, not only the ulama in the Muslim community. It is time that we embrace the Christian leadership, the priests and the ministers out in the Christian community, the rabbis and those in the Jewish community who support the cause of the Palestinian people and who support the cause of justice and freedom. And I think this is where we need to intensify. Already, of course, on Wednesday, when we are going to have this particular march, my appeal even to the leadership of the Al-Quds Foundation and the MJC is to make sure that the platform is shared with many of our Christian leaders so that our people can desist from the point of view that this is an exclusive Muslim issue. It's not an exclusive Muslim issue. So beyond the marches and beyond the interviews that we have, I think on the ground and civil society and the solidarity movement, we need to do a little bit more to embrace the collective of the South African community for the struggle, inshallah.
Inshallah. That was Maulana Ihsan Hendricks, as we said, the director at the Al-Quds Foundation. Shukran to you, Maulana. A very big shukran also to Professor Farid Isaac, member of the member of the board of BDS South Africa. Shukran jazeelan to both of you, and I say assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi ta'ala.
We are now joined online by Dr. Anwar Nagia, the director of the Palestine Museum. Dr. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to you and to the avid listeners of the VLC. And thank you for having us.
Shukran, doctor. Doctor, first question, how does the South African government move beyond the rhetoric and take concrete action on Palestine?
Well, we are pleasantly surprised by their latest action, and we obviously know that the issues around just the simple Rohingya issue, they've capitulated, and they've been very ambivalent with regard to the Israeli project, and we've expected them to not only downgrade the embassy but also probably close it or expel the illegitimate state of Israeli embassy officials that are here. Because remember, the Israeli government in 1948, when two things happened, in 1948 the apartheid state of South Africa was formed, and in 1948 the apartheid state of Israel was formed under the guise of the United Nations, who, despite that, in 1948, in January in 48, they've already accepted the Human Rights Charter, which in fact desists from the activities of an apartheid state, and how contradictory the United Nations were in accepting these two illegitimate states. So the Israeli government were very, very closely linked to the old Nationalist Party, and we would have expected our government to downgrade this embassy, if not just close it.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear from Terry. Maybe you want to just give a quick comment on that.
Yes, both countries are highly, highly militarized, and in the 1970s, Israel was economically in a very desperate situation, and South Africa provided the funding for the development of the Israeli armaments industry, which is now a menace internationally. Israel goes from one war to the next, and then it markets its weapons as battle-tested and proven on Palestinians. It's exporting to 130 countries around the world. It's now the sixth largest arms exporting country. One of the markers of the transition here was the 1977 arms embargo by the United Nations Security Council. Obviously, there were loopholes, and it was flouted, particularly by Israel, but it did make a huge contribution in delegitimizing the apartheid government here.
Mm-hmm.
It's time not only for the South African government to downgrade or break our diplomatic relations with Israel, but it's time that we promoted through the African Union and other groupings mandatory arms embargo to and from Israel, both weapons and exports of weapons from Israel, because the consequences we are seeing in Africa, for instance, are horrendous. That we have refugees from the Congo because of the what is known as Africa's First World War,
mm-hmm.
of Israeli weapons maintaining the Kabila dictatorship in office against the plunder of Congolese resources.
Mm-hmm. Just to remind our listeners once again that the views expressed on the program does not necessarily reflect the views of the Voice of the Cape, its management or staff. My attention to the SMS line, there's a message here that says, yes, it is definitely a humanitarian issue. Postscript, hat off to people like Teddy. We thank you. They won't move past the rhetoric. Chances are very slim. Well, once again, a very big shukran and thank you to our listeners for their participation to the program called The Burning Issue here on The Voice of the Cape. Now, I believe we are also joined online by Kaya Khaba, who is the national spokesperson for Nehau. Kaya, a very good evening to you.
To listeners at home, and good evening to the other speakers on the line.
Good evening, Kaya. Good evening, Kerry.
Good evening.
Kaya, my first question to you, how does Nehau view the South African government's two-tongued perspective on Palestine?
Well, basically, our view on the whole issue is that our government, especially those who are interested with running DECO, are in cohorts with apartheid Israel, and they're doing everything to undermine our long-held history with the Palestinians. And as the former speaker has also alluded that the apartheid government of South Africa and apartheid Israel colluded during the apartheid days of South Africa to perpetuate the issue of apartheid. So basically what we're saying is we, the people in DECO, need to start behaving in a manner that seeks to represent us, the people on the streets, the people of this country, especially also the ideals and the resolutions of the ruling party, which is the African National Congress, which is to say we are in solidarity with the Palestinian people. And of course, our struggle is the struggle of the Palestinians. If you remember well, even Nelson Mandela said, our freedom as South Africans is not complete without the freedom of the Palestinians. So South Africans, we have that obligation to then struggle towards the attainment of freedom for the Palestinians, and we shouldn't be doing anything that should be able to aid or mend relations with apartheid Israel. Instead, we should be doing the direct opposite and ensure that apartheid Israel is isolated. We speak to the issues of boycotts, sanctions, and so on, so that they feel that what they're doing is uncalled for. I mean, the freedom of South Africans also came in the form of sanctions and boycotts that were done by other countries. So we should be leading in that aspect or in that field of ensuring that we strangle out apartheid Israel and we fight for the attainment of the freedom of the Palestinians.
Well, my attention once again to the SMS line and message line. One of our listeners is saying to me, I should read all the messages. Why are you not reading all my comments? I will get through those comments to my listener. It's just that we have, quite a number of guests, and we would want to give our guests an opportunity to really express themselves and also on this particular topic. So I do make an appeal that you bear with me at this stage. Dr. Anwar Nage, do we still have you on the line?
Yes.
Okay. So, Doctor, I think you've given us an idea of how you think the ANC government should respond to Trump's Jerusalem decision. Is there anything else at this stage pertinent that you wish to share with our listeners?
Yeah, let's just say that besides the fact that Trump is now saying this is an election promise which he made to the AIPAC and to the Zionist lobby in America, it's also that Trump is also facing an impeachment. So is Netanyahu facing an impeachment. We also know that Bill Clinton went to war on the face of his Monica Lewinsky potential impeachment. And for Trump, in fact, to use this just as an election promise, we think it's also a way to deflect his particular potential impeachment with his collusion that he had with corruption in the elections that took place. So that's one aspect, whether or not he worked with Russia or didn't work with Russia. The man is a complete buffoon, doesn't understand international politics, and he probably didn't even know the geography where certain of the countries of the world were. And what is happening, he's playing to the new cons, and he's playing to the right wing of America, which ultimately have put him in power. And they're not necessarily a majority. And I can tell you, many peace-loving Americans are not going to tolerate this. And many of them are standing up. And we'll see civil society bringing this matter to fore much more fluently.
Maybe just your quick comment, Dr. Anwar Nagia. As we said, we are joined online by Dr. Anwar Nagia, director of the Palestine Museum. The decision to relocate the U.S. Embassy to East Jerusalem is regrettable and not constructive in advancing a sustainable solution. What is your comment on that?
Well, it's not even a question where they locate everything. This is a complete geopolitical a move to try and test the waters that other countries, in fact, give credence to the Zionist project. Now, despite the fact that we have many, many countries now, for the first time, having kind of tacit support for the Palestinians, that momentum has grown to such an extent that it's needed now more than ever, because they can't sustain the lie the Zionist project is. And the Zionist project, in fact, will lead us to a potential third world war. And Americans do know that, and also people in Palestine and in illegitimate Israel know that. And that's the kind of pressure they're putting both on Netanyahu, civil societies. Many of the military people are not participating. People are just resigning from the army, and some people are just
your call has been placed on hold. Please.
Okay, I think either we've lost Dr. Anwar Nagia on that one. Quickly, do we have Kaya on the line still? Kaya? Okay, we're going to check there with our sound technical engineer if he can assist us at this stage. Maybe see if we can go for a quick ad break. And when we come back, we'll continue with the burning issue here on The Voice of the Cape.
With
Ridwan Ahmed. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh. Welcome back to the airwaves of The Voice of the Cape. And if you have just joined us, we continue our discussion on Trump's controversial decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Now, this week is a crucial week for South Africa as the ANC heads to its elective conference, where it makes resolutions on key policies on the agenda. Will be the Palestinian issue. Now, we are joined in the studio still by Terry Crawford Brown, representing the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, and we are joined online by Dr. Anwar Nagia, who is the director of the Palestine Museum. Doctor, do we have you back on the line?
Yes, thanks.
Thanks very much for that. Now, Doctor, another comment, for example, says that South Africa recalls all United Nations resolutions of both the United Nations Security Council and the United Nations General Assembly, with particular attention to those resolutions that have a direct bearing on the unilateral decision taken by the United States. What is your comment on that?
Well, firstly, you know, South Africa is unfortunately in this very difficult and invidious position, which I don't think it should be invidious, that we have what is called AGOA, which is the Growth and African Trade, which means South African companies and American companies can do business in South Africa to the tune of many, many billions of rands. And if the South African ambassador at the United Nations, despite the fact that they condemn the resolutions supporting the issues of the Palestinian plight of the Palestinian people, it means that from a trade perspective, they've cowered down. And that has been the sad and the ironic situation in the South African government's position at the United Nations. They sing one song, and then they're not consistent at the United Nations. And I think within the rank and file of the ANC, there's a large member support, in fact, for our position, a pro-Palestinian position, that we, in fact, collapse the notion of a two-state theory, and that we collapse the notion of the illegitimacy of the Israeli project. In terms of the Zionist project. And so the African government is very complicit in their silence, conspicuous in their silence when it comes to the issues of the trade that they don't want to sacrifice. And that's the difficulty. And to political persons like ourselves and many South Africans who have lived under apartheid, you yourself and others, and Terry particularly, you know, he's much more senior than us.
Yeah.
I mean, he knows, Terry, I'm not giving away your age. I've joined the club recently. But Terry will understand that, you know, the vociferous nature in terms of how the lobbies work, both in South Africa and at the UN, it makes it difficult for client states, ex-client states like South Africa, to desist.
Mm-hmm.
And we urge our politicos and we urge our political formations, in fact, not to give in. Now is a time in our history where we have an opportune moment, in fact, not to fall on the wrong side of history. And we urge the conference that are taking place now that they move beyond just a downgrade, but they also move in terms of not supporting both Britain, France, Germany, and America in their condemnation against the illegitimate state.
We've got a couple of minutes left. Very quickly, Terry, can I ask you? I think we spoke about this thing, the International Criminal Court possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yes, as Anwar has alluded, the Americans have no compunctions about blackmailing countries such as South Africa and Algoa, but just 2 weeks ago, they threatened to blackmail the Palestinians on closing the Palestine office in Washington if they proceeded with the International Criminal Court of action.
Mm-hmm.
Now that the gloves are off and the illusion of an U.S. mediation has been jettisoned, I would hope that the international community can support the Palestinians in bringing charges at the International Criminal Court against both Israel and the United States, although they are not members of the ICC, but they can still be charged in terms of genocide, in terms of Article 6, crimes against humanity, including apartheid in terms of Article 7, and war crimes, and bring this matter to the International Criminal Court. We continue to bemoan the fact that the ICC has focused its attention on Africa and has failed to bring war criminals such as Bush.
Dr. Anna Nagia, as I said, time is running out, but maybe just from your side, you know, there's been mass marches to Parliament
and Blair to justice. This is an opportunity to re-establish the credibility of the ICC.
Dr. Anna Nagia, as I said, time is running out, but maybe just from your side, you know, there's been mass marches to Parliament, there's been picketing and all those kind of things. But in your view, very quickly, what can civil society do as regards the prevailing situation?
Well, I think, first of all, I agree 100% with Terry, and I agree in his position that there's only this period in history that has allowed us to be able to take up the issue both within America, both within Britain and France, considering Marconi and the British Prime Minister Theresa May have also fleetingly condemned that action. But what can civil society do? Very simply, the march on Wednesday is another of such a particular momentum that we need to drive the wedge in. And yes, civil society goes to meetings and public meetings, and Terry organized a very successful demonstration and protest on Friday.
On Friday, yes.
And that is the momentum that civil society can do. But we cannot excuse civil society anymore that in their conversation and in their homes and in their places of work and their place of assembly, that if they don't bring this issue as a human rights issue and not a religious war, then I think they'll be failing in their duty. This period in history with Trump's declaration of Jerusalem as the capital of illegitimate Israel is giving us activists a good shot in the arm, because American civil society will support us. It's the first time that there was this exogenous thing that's been done. And you need in history exogenous things. Either people die or either people, in fact, go to jail. But, of course, here is a decision, a global unilateral decision against everything, both the UN and both what normal societies and restorative justice. This guy has just declared that. Now, we know it's to bail him out, but we can use this period in history to opportune. And therefore, the Palestine Museum is there. The Palestine Museum is there to create a proper repository of all of civil society's campaigns and house it in one particular front, like BDS, like the PSG, like the Palestinian support groups, all of these organizations, then we can create a positive for our response. Look, remember, oppression is not deliberate, it's by calculation. And to undo that, we must do exactly the same. By calculation, we must plot, we must plan, and we must give expression to the campaigns in a consistent way and in a meaningful way. And you know, both the unions, Kaya and both Kerry, has been at this forefront of this campaign for many, many decades now. And we literally salute them for these continuous actions. And so too does the other society. And your radio station itself is another medium. You know, the attack must be at every particular front. It cannot be left just to activists like ourselves.
Mm. Well, a very big shukran there to Dr. Anwar Nagia, as we said, the director of the Palestine Museum. Shukran once again for your participation to the program this evening. And on that note, we say to you everything of the best. And assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Well, that was Dr. Anwar Nagia, as we said, director of the Palestine Museum. Well, we still have Terry in studio with us, and it's a humanitarian issue. Terry, you know, any concluding remarks from your side, or maybe if you want to address the issue, what can civil society do?
Get your marching shoes on Wednesday and march to Parliament from District 6.
Okay. Terry, thanks very much for also joining us in the studio and for your participation in the program this evening. That's Terry Crawford Brown representing the Palestine Solidarity Campaign. My apology to our listeners that we could not get to your SMSs via the content, but I'm sure you would agree, you know, that what we've had to discuss with Terry Crawford Brown, Malina Ihsan Hendricks, Professor Farid Essacks, Dr. Anwar Nagia, those were very pertinent issues. So Terry, once again, a very big thank you to you.
Shukran.
Pleasant evening further, Afwan, and a very good evening to you.